And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Oh, hello, fans of zombies around the globe! In today's sequel, we move the location from the sparsely populated African desert to the all-you-can-eat buffet in the densely packed slums of India. That's right, it's the Dead 2, Electric Vindaloo, India, as we celebrate the diversity of world human cuisine.
Hello everyone and welcome to The Vault, the Starling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. This time out, folks, I am one of your hosts, Mr. Jason Giaconetti, and I am joined by the usual crew of misfits around here. Across your radio listening dial, the OG himself, Mr. Chris Honeywell.
Oh shit, I forgot what I was going to say. Wait a minute. You will never see my daughter again.
That laugh you heard was the hair metal hero, Chris Tyler.
I don't have any parents.
And last but not least is my usual partner in crime, my brother, Mr. Luke Giaconetti.
Look at what mankind has done with all its sins. Maybe we have brought this upon ourselves.
Damn right.
Maybe.
Movie doesn't have, I can honestly say, for those of you who haven't figured out what we're talking about yet, and you think maybe at the front of it, we're talking about The Dead 2. It's now referred to as The Dead 2, India. And it is the sequel to the original movie, The Dead, by the Ford brothers. And if you thought The Dead was like, yeah, let's not have any laughs or anything where you like kind of feel good about yourself. They said, hey, let's push the envelope further and make you really not want to. This movie, I was watching this. I saw it when it first came out. I was able to score a copy of it. And because I'd heard a lot of this is 2013. And it was actually highly recommended, and people said this is the movie you got to see. It is like one of the best zombie movies in years. And after The Dead, I was like, okay, this thing's got to be worth my checking out. These guys made a really good movie when they were setting in Africa. Now this one's set in India, and I think this one is even harder on it's even more real, more harsh, more. I mean, this is unrelenting.
Yeah.
Ever a time you're like, oh good, things are gonna work out, like nothing is good in this movie, and you're like, wow, that's why this to me feels so real. And it speaks volumes to the difference in the worlds in which we live. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Thank
you. I'm just saying, just try to speak that, try to say that as in the nicest way possible. I'm not trying to speak badly about other countries or anything like that, but it's so different when you're looking at their country. First of all, I mean, India, has deserts and has the number of people in India, the way the housing situations are, and the way oh my god, okay, blows your mind, right? Because you don't think about
the opening sequence of the slum. You could tell they filmed in a real slum. That wasn't a set dressed up to look slummy. That place had been, they went somewhere and felt like.
I think if it was outside, I think it was on location.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is it's, you probably can't film much, like you could only film something like the beginning sequence in the slum where you get just a really good idea of how it's laid out and how like fucked up it is and stuff. But like, and you can tell they solve that problem by pretty much all the zombie stuff action in the slum took place like in a warehouse, you know, that they dressed up as the slums and that's where they did all the interior scenes and stuff because they couldn't film it there. But they, you know, once again, like the parallels to the other movie and the differences, I'm really glad we watched this because there's like some of their strengths from the last movie come back and some of their weaknesses come back and a lot of the elements from the last movie come back, but they're in a completely different world, you know. They're, this one's more densely populated for one.
That's actually intensely. my first note is we go from sparsely populated Western Africa in the first film to now very densely populated India. That alone is a difference. And you know, Jay, you were talking also about, you know, just the way that the you know, comparing the, you know, art and the world that us as Americans know and then comparing it to here in India. The one that really kind of struck that home for me is when our main character, you know, when he's talking to his other expat friend on the phone and they're telling him, no, the company's getting us out of here, getting all the Americans out and all that. And he's saying, no, I got to go see her because something's going on and something bad's happening. And like, there's gunfire in the city and stuff. And what he says is exactly what you expect an American to say. Oh, she's a local. She's probably used to this. She's used to there being conflict and gunfight, fire and stuff. That's no big deal, man. We got to get out of here. You know, that's, I mean, it's awful to say it as an American, but that is the ugly American response to that, isn't it? That they just must be used to there being gunfire in the streets and stuff. It's no big deal, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if you really hear about that in India so much, but regardless, it does a good job, like the last movie, of bringing in what the cultural and societal mores are of a completely different culture, right? Like, I know that these guys that directed it aren't Indian, but it definitely has that feeling of, especially with the main character and in the girlfriend. I mean, that's something that's, you know, not the Romeo and Juliet type deal where it's the parents don't want the kids to do anything to do with each other, and what does that do to this family and our main character and the love interest there and her father. I mean, you don't really think about that in a zombie movie. Like, you could strip the zombies out of this and you've got just a tale of cross-cultural love, you know. That's the thing that really struck me with this one was I was not expecting that kind of backdrop.
That much story.
A
love story, introducing Short Round into the mix, you know. Yeah.
And even the characters involved in their stories, like the idea that her dad is a minister,
yes,
you know, and a Hindu minister, where they're talking specifically about reincarnation and karma and achieving perfection of the soul. You know, it's like, I don't want to put too fine a point on it, but for a horror film, a zombie film released in 2013, that's some heavy shit.
Yeah.
To think about, you know.
Not really.
I mean, by this point, most zombie movies are just like, hey, remember The Walking Dead? That was a hit. Let's rip that off, you know?
So yeah. Yeah, just
they sort of did this, and this was one of my, like, I like that, like, they did a better job of it this time than the last time, where they tried to put, like, where they're like, they were really hitting all the, like, the Romero elements of, like, making this feel like in the lived in world sort of thing, and that it was just sort of playing out like it would. But they were also, whichever one of the brothers was the writer, you know, or whether they both got together, were like, well, we have to have some sort of undertone to it to add that resonance, like the consumerism undertone of Dawn of the Dead or whatever. So they sort of pushed it in there through dialogue, and they did the same thing in this. They gave the father, mother, and daughter, their story through dialogue, and then we find out the history of the guilty conscience of the protagonist and stuff. And dialogue is not like just regular sort of workman, like get through the story dialogue works fine in this, but where they're doing exposition. But like by the end, the way it wraps up, you know, it does the same thing as the last one where it leaves the ending open-ended. But this one, like, you could sort of go like, okay, this guy, maybe this guy's in some sort of karmic purgatory right now, you know, and for, you know, because what he was feeling guilty about and how he, and the situation he's in do seem to sort of like roughly karmically add up and stuff. But I don't like, I don't know if that's their strong point. That's just, that stuff didn't resonate with me as much as just the mechanics of propelling a zombie, when they just propel it forward like a zombie story and work the atmosphere that they're creating, that they have their sort of own feel of zombies and stuff. And when they're doing that, that's when the magic happens. That's the stuff that makes the whole movie tick. Although, you know, I mean, this one gave me the moment where he's talking to his friend and the guy's like, hey, you ever going to try the paraglider? And I wrote down paraglider.
Yeah, paraglider. I can legitimately say I don't think I could have predicted a paraglider playing such a key role in this film. Right.
I was hoping it would when he said, you know, paraglider. I'm like, ooh, why are we mentioning paragliders? But then again, we just sort of mention things in movies like this so they can go by. You know, the guy just happens to have a paraglider place. But I was sort of hoping that he would take a look, because I was like, that would be kind of cool, paragliding into Mumbai or whatever. But yep, they sure enough did it. And I don't think they would have done something like that in the last movie, you know, or have it as much story in the last movie.
Well, okay, so again, both brothers, both the Ford brothers, both John Howard and Jonathan get credit. They both get director credit, they both get writing credit, but cinematography is done by Jonathan Ford. And then at the end of the day, Howard Ford is who's the one who's used, actually looked at as more probably the director instead of the cinematographer. They get into work together. He's the one who was, he has the producer credit because he's the one who raised the money, and his brother was the one who shot a lot of things. And what they wind up doing, again, they work really well together. Just two, and again, just to make sure we reference this too, because I think we mentioned before, they are just two brothers from England, and they were known for doing like commercials and stuff. And then they made The Dead, and they made The Dead 2, and you know, it then became like that's really what they're known for. They've only ever made, I think, one other movie, major movie, that was a Zoe Bell movie, which is kind of more of an actioner. But they don't have 20, 30 directing credits. They don't have a ton of things. These guys made this stuff, and these movies, both movies, punch you in the gut from the get-go, and you're like, okay, like, you know, that's what makes it interesting, because it's as similar as the two movies are, they are vastly different than each other at times too, and they feel like they both live in the exact same world.
Yeah, well, I mean, the beginning of the movie is the guy coming off a boat from Somalia, so it's it's perfect. Like, if you're gonna do a sequel, not necessarily in name only, but in the same world, it's like just that one little piece, that one little connecting thread.
I have a note that says I'm going to tell my kids this is World War Z, and like, because it really could. You could just go through different. You could have, you know, episode 3 be in China, you know, and do that, or Japan or something like that.
Or Korea, and set it on a train. Yeah.
I mean, sure. Yeah. But like this feels more like World War Z to me than the World War Z movie did.
And we said that last time, that World War Z, the movie, wishes it was The Dead, because I can tell you, I mean, you know, I know some people like World War Z. I wasn't one of them, not the movie anyway, but, you know,
they were shamblers in the book, right? If I remember right, they weren't fast like in the movie. They were traditional Romero.
World War Z, they are shamblers, and that's the thing. For those who have not read World War Z or any of the other books that Max Brooke has written about World War Z, like the other books and whatever, it's like just telling you stories, and then they tell you how to survive things, And they're like, you want to make sure you don't have long hair because zombies can grab that. Like, things like that are in there too.
Good, I'm all set.
You know, no, but that's the whole thing. It's like, it's all these stories about what happened and stuff like that. And I think what happened really with World War Z was the name of the book is perfect for a movie title. And yes. Brad Pitt got attached to it. And then it just started getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it went from being just a little horror movie to being like a movie we're going to put in the theaters and try to make some money off of. And again, I've watched World War Z. It's not my favorite zombie movie. But I mean, again, I thought there are worse zombie movies than that. But the problem is when you read the source,
I don't know if there's worse zombie movies that cost more money than it though.
There you go. That's the right.
I mean, you know what? Crappy zombie movies got a right to make a living too, but you know, they can't be that expensive.
Uwe Ball made some expensive movies that are really crappy.
I guarantee you he didn't make anything as expensive as World War Z. I'm just saying.
The level of his crappy movie compared to how bad World War Z might have been, I enjoyed World War Z far more than any Uwe Ball movie ever. So
that's fair.
Sorry,
World War Z like sort of worked in its own world, but it just wasn't that it wasn't that memorable. It wasn't that good to me. But it didn't feel like the World War Z book reminded me of like Studs Terkel, you know, World War II stories of veterans recounting it. You know, it was like somebody made it to be like a piece of history. So it was just sort of raw stories. And I mean, that's the thing is it's built to be like you could run it like they did The Purge, you know, low budget and just different countries every time. You know, a different story from a different point of view, and you have a whole franchise of not super expensive movies, you know? And right. I think they blew it by trying to make it huge. And zombie movies, you don't put Brad Pitt in a zombie movie. You put
Characters and unknowns with a lot of oatmeal colored red on their face. Like, that's what I want, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that's also part of the issue that we've seen just collectively with the growth and of zombies in general, right? I mean, and you can blame that on friggin' like Walking Dead, or you can blame that on like, you know, the whatever it might be. Because let's be honest, is that when 28 Days Later came out, and we got, and I know they're not zombies, but they're zombies. like just say. I read the book. They're zombies. The thing is, when that happened, you had fast things. They could run. They could do whatever. And I know that's not unique because they're jumping vampires, and there's all these other things.
Well, there's a couple of Italian movies with fast zombies in it.
Right.
You know?
That's what I'm saying. You're right. It's not like this unique to there. But when 28 Days Later did it, you were like, wow, look at this thing. Like, because 28 Days Later is completely like it's the movie's terrifying. The movie's like it hits you in a totally different way. I mean, this book and the movie just hits you and you're like, wow, that's really good. And whether you want to look at that as it or whatever it might be that's causing it, like the wave of the fast zombies, the fast moving zombies became a thing. And then Walking Dead, they're not fast, they're slow. And so people were like, well, we got to do this again. And it becomes the whole debate. What should it be? And it's like, and I understand that Walking Dead took zombies from something that was talked about by, you know, horror guys and nerds and stuff like that, to literally little kids are talking about zombies and, you know, decapitations and whatever else. It took it mainstream. And when we look at the best zombie movies when we were growing up, like Dawn of the Dead and things like that, like those were not mainstream, right? No. Night of the Dead was not mainstream. Zombie is not mainstream. But now zombies are mainstream. Zombies are in commercials. They're Disney movies. It's just everywhere. They've become kind of like, okay, it's just part of what it was.
The same thing happened with the vampires between Anne Rice and then Twilight. Sure, yeah. Like everything goes in cycles. And some of the stuff is what you're going to glom onto, and some of it you're going to go like, yeah, this isn't for me. Like, I prefer my vampires to not be, you know, sparkly fucking creepers, but that's me, you know? What the fuck do I know? This movie's made $1 billion.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing, though. Vampires have been just had about every iteration you could almost think of, every little twist on them, and, you know, throughout the length of time, everybody's tried to do their, you know, they don't grow fangs, but they do drink blood. Just all the different. And I think True Blood was sort of the end point of, like, where everybody's like, all right, we're done with vampires for for another 20-year cycle or whatever, 10-year cycle or however.
Right. Well, the thing is, if you think about it, right, because you have your vampires and your Twilight movies and whatever, and what came out is around the same time as Twilight was 30 Days a Night. And 30 Days a Night cannot be any more different than Twilight. And that movie is phenomenal. And the books are good, and the TV, they weren't movies. They were those shorts they did on the internet, and then they put them on TV. All that stuff was good. Like, it's just visceral and hard. Like, it's just, oh, my God, this is great, right? So then what happens is you always get that response in the middle of whatever. When something's going the other way, you have someone say, no, let's make it what it should be. And that's what happened. We had a whole lot of fast-moving zombies. We had zombie movies that were kind of getting brainless. And then the Ford brothers make The Dead, and it literally is out of nowhere, didn't cost a whole lot of money to make. You're like, this is really good. They make now The Dead 2. I think they stepped up what they were doing. I think, to me, I like this film better than the first. I know you're not supposed to like the sequel better.
No, it's better.
It's a better movie because they kind of learned from their first one, and the story is so much deeper. Like, you literally are watching this going, man, is he going to make it to this girl or not? Is her mom going to kill them all? And I'm going to be very honest with you. The fact that in India, the population density is so much higher than the parts of Africa they're in, it changes the game so much.
You're going to get swarmed. Like,
in this one, I mean, they had the montage in the last movie, like the sort of, you know, nightmare montage of them driving through the night and just sort of like whipping through the night. And you'd every once in a while see a zombie or whatever. But in this one, they're whipping through the night on that motorcycle. And there's like, it seems like there's a zombie every 20 feet, you know?
Yeah.
So they're just sort of dodging in and out of them on a trail. And it's a lot more nerve wracking.
Right. Like, they're in a Jeep. My mobility is shot to shit. I think if I had a car and some sort of weapon, I might be able to survive the scenario from The Dead. I wouldn't have a fucking chance in hell in The Dead 2. Like, that's it's just not going to happen, you know?
Yeah, no, you're more like plunk you down in the middle of, like, New Zealand or something, you know?
Oh, no, I already know what I'd be. I'm the fodder. Well, it's like in Zombieland, it's like,
you guys
know,
go on.
The fat guys didn't last long when it started, you know.
But the thing is, too, is you think
now
about
we'll it, rig like, you up a Mad Max wheelbarrow to it'll be like a lone wolf and cub. We'll just be pushing you along in a wheelbarrow. You could slice them up with a sword.
Yo, if literally
lone wolf and chub. Oh, we have a movie, guys. We have a movie.
The Lone Wolf and Chub.
I love it.
Sounds like a porno.
I was going to say it's like a really action-packed porno, or.
That's what I'm saying.
It'll be all of those things.
Yeah. Oh my God. Okay. So. What I was saying is Chris made the big point, like there's so many people as they're going through the night. That scene alone, when they're driving through the night, and it's nerve wracking, but it's like out of nowhere you kind of see them you can't see them, and all of a sudden you catch their eyes, and their eyes are all, of course, you know, like, you know, they've they've, you know, they're like cataract over kind of thing, right? That look, that blue eye. And the thing is, every time they stop, it's like, okay, we're gonna stop here. And like in the Dead, they go somewhere and you have one coming and whatever. Here it's like, we stop, and as soon as you stop, there's like 20, 30 of them coming already. You're like, man, it's just non-stop. It's all there. And you're like, oh my God. Like, it just was I know it's not real, but it's creating dread in me for the characters. And you're like,
yes.
Okay, like, it's not like I haven't seen this movie before, but you're like, man, this is really starting to get on. Like, it's kind of raising up that feeling inside you, because you're like, okay, there's a little kid. It's not just this guy. Like, this kid didn't do anything wrong, and yet he's still stuck there. And, like, again... Well,
that did it for me, and it was the important stuff, was the kid and the lead character. The kid did a great job of being like a tough sort of presenting himself as Short Round at the beginning. You need me to survive, and I'll help you. And then the minute he knows that he can trust that guy, he's back. He's, even though he's a tough little orphan kid, he's back to like being a little kid, you know, being a kid and like, you know, just sort of like, I've got an adult here. And that set the core emotionally, like the father and the daughter drama and stuff like that. That was sort of reminded me of in the last movie, the guys at the, you know, master control, you know, in down in the war room or whatever sort of thing. Cause like, it just sort of did it as shorthand. They could film all the scenes in they just had a small room in the room for the mom. And a couple doors to open up with zombies jiggling at them. And like the second I realized, okay, they're doing shorthand with these guys, is when the mother bit the father, and there's no other is the mother still alive in there and trying to get out? And you know, what's going on there? It's no, just the father comes out holding his neck and it's all over. We don't have to worry about the mom anymore. I'm like, okay, they're just getting the stuff completed in this scene. But but once you got the kid and the guy working, that put a heart to the movie.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, the thing is this, is that, you know, a lot of people when these came out missed them. So you know, like we said the last time, we're hoping people will start kind of rediscovering them. The one thing that these movies, both of these films, have going for it that some people look as a negative, in Train to Busan and Peninsula, is that they're both English language movies. They're not, you know, again, there's people speaking, you know, whatever other language, and they put subtitles on it real quick, but it's not like the whole overall movie is in Japanese or in whatever. And, you know, because I know that turns some people off, like the idea that they'd have to read a subtitle or that they're going to have an overdub going all over the movie. And it just, I just don't, again, I mean, I don't have a problem watching a movie with subtitles. That's not a problem for me, but it's like, I know some people that really turns them off. But these are two movies that if you're really into kind of like, they're new, they're new zombie movies, but they're zombie movies that are built around the idea of actually getting you to a point where you're like, okay, how can you get out of this? What could that happen? Like all that, like I said, the dread or the, you know, stuff you're starting to feel in there. These films kind of flew under the radar, you know, Rue Morgue and Fangoria and whatever talked about them, but they didn't get major play. You know, they're both on, well, I don't know that for sure. The Dead 2 is on YouTube, you know, kind of thing. And I think The Dead was, I don't know if it still is, but like it's on Prime and whatever. It's like, so, but there are movies that people might pass over because there's not a fancy poster. There's not like, you know, whatever. It's just because they're very kind of...
They sound generic.
Yeah. I
mean,
saying
it's like... you see it what do you call it? Redbox or something.
Redbox, yeah. But it's also, the posters are nothing spectacular. It just says The Dead by the Ford brothers. And you're like, okay. Like there's no flashy poster. There's no, you know, whatever. It's just very simple. But I think that's why I think these movies work so well. Because they're not trying to be more than what... you know, they were putting on the screen. They're not trying to be huge actiony blockbusters. They're not trying to be whatever. It's just, it's real. It's realistic. And I think that's part of the problem too. We sometimes, you know, we get to the point where like everything's so fantastical in these movies. And again, we have to accept that there's zombies, but would a zombie outbreak look more like this? You know, kind of thing, yeah. Where it's like really the like whatever. I mean, or is it going to look like, I mean, Peninsula is another story because Peninsula is already, you're already past it. But like Train to Busan, where it's like they're crazy. That movie's intense too. And it's not like you're sitting there going, oh, this is boring. Because the last thing Train to Busan is boring. I mean, it's nonstop craziness. But even then, it's like the people are, you know, doing heroic things. And I'm not bashing. I love Train to Busan. They're being heroic in these situations.
It's more Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. In here, this guy just wants to get to his girl. He's not a hero. He's not. He's just a guy.
Yeah, like, and they do it, like, there's enough of it, like, he wants to get to his girl, and it's, but it's still, it's, it makes him more, like, of a gray character, because it may not be as much, it's partially because he loves her, but also partially because of his feelings of guilt and stuff.
Yeah.
And stuff. So he's more of just like a real guy who's not perfect and very flawed and just in a bad situation. And I like how they establish him. The first shot is him up on the wind generator.
Yeah,
there's no way. So hang on. Luke's friend Joe said this when they were went and saw Godzilla. That's when he says Spiral. Nope. I saw that. That's the first thing I see. I go, and nope. I am nope. I don't care what I got. I am terrified of heights. Nope. That is nuts. He's up in the air. I'm like, that ain't. And I'm certainly not making a phone call while I'm hanging out up there.
Yeah, but that's what's so beautiful about it, because it shows this guy's kind of, he's kind of a cool, he's kind of collected. He's in a foreign country and doing his specialized thing, but he's like, it's symbolically, he's like up above everything, just sort of hanging out on this like high tech thing. Yep. While all around him is the, you know, the squalor of the slums and the, you know, you never see the fancy, the more, they speak of the more fancier upgrade sort of areas, but you only see like the country and the slums. But like, it starts out, he's all dressed nice and he's just sort of hanging out up there calling his girlfriend, and it's just a beautiful, because, you know, I saw the last movie, I know where this is going. Enjoy it while you can, buddy.
Yeah. The other thing too is the scene when he comes upon the mother and the daughter after the car crash and they're trapped in the car.
Yes.
I mean, to rip your guts out kind of scene, because you know he has to do that. Like, at some level. Yes.
No, they take you through the thought process of him doing it, and then the desperation where he's like, well, I've got to try.
Right.
And it's a replication. It's even in the same part, you know, relative to the last movie where he ran across the woman with the kid, and except they've definitely taken it up a big notch, you know, after that. This scene is hard. This scene's more like the end of what was it, The Mist, you know, or something like that, you know. It's more comparable to that, but it's even ramped up from that. It's just, you know, the zombies are just moving in and you're right there with him, and it's relentless, and it takes it through to its conclusion. And like, it even makes it harsher because he sort of wants to take them both out with one shot and doesn't get to do that, and it just twists the knife into him even more.
Right. And the thing is, it's not like he can leave them there.
No, it's worse if he leaves them there.
Right. And the thing is, and the windshield's already smashed out. It's not like he can, like, okay, lock the door, I'll come back. Like, he can't come back. He can't do, like, there's nothing he can do.
They're done, yeah.
Yeah. And you feel that hopelessness. Because even if he frees them, he can't take them with him. Their legs are all, I mean,
her legs are crushed. Yeah.
Crushed. And you're assuming the child's legs are crushed too, but like, there's nothing he can do. And it's that, it's the guilt he has for leaving his girlfriend, you know, and then having, you know, them with the baby in America. And now he's feeling guilty. He has to get to his girlfriend, who is also pregnant. You know, you think the guy might wear a rubber once in a while, but hey, why not?
Yeah, that or get the TV fixed for one of them.
You know. Right. One or the other. I'm saying it, you know, kind of thing. You know, kind of thing. Like, with that scene, you're just like, okay, like, this is much deeper than we should be getting out of a movie about zombies.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, it works beautifully in this movie about zombies that is still giving you that the deeper parts. It's giving you, again, I've never been to India, right? But I'm looking at this going, it looks like what I've heard about India, what I've seen the pictures, this is what it looks like. Right? This looks like this looks to me as someone who's never been there, I could totally buy that this is India. It's like when somebody who's never been to America sees a film and they're like, well, look, they're telling me that's New York. But like people who from New York, first of all, and other can tell, no, that's Toronto. Like that's, that's the wrong, this, they don't have streets like that. I don't know what India looks like, but this appears to be India. You know, I'm just saying, you know.
No, they went and shot on location, and the shots in this, you know, the pre-shots in the slum are Indian slum, and they got all the like crowded, you know, they went out and got the shots of how crowded and dirty and old dogs and, you know, the whole nine yards. And just like Africa, you know, they went there and they were and they are very talented. They have as a group, they have their weaknesses, but they just also have that consistency of being sort of twin auteur stuff. So where they capture the feel of the place that they're in. And that is where like the whole thing vibes on is, you know, especially American zombie viewers are like, I know how I would deal with a zombie apocalypse, blah, blah, blah. Well, they're like, this movie puts you in the position of like, okay, dude, but you're in India. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm sure there's a percentage of Americans who've been to India who go like, oh, I know how India is laid out. But also at the same time, they'd be like, oh, I'd be kind of screwed. So it's a genius way of doing it while not having to do some, you know, stupid idea that makes it different or anything. It's just the opposite. Strip it right down to the barest components. I mean, I think that's the magic of zombie movies. I think the more complex a zombie movie gets, the less it feels like a zombie movie. You know, maybe because my first one was Night of the Living Dead, which is, you know, as stripped down as you're going to get. But that's really all you need for a zombie movie. Stuff like Zombieland moves into the, you know, into an entertaining comedy for me, you know, but I'm not going to watch it to get the feeling of a zombie movie like I would a Romero movie or something like that.
No, I mean, I'm not expecting that when I see something that is clearly a riff on the current trend. You know, it's better than those ridiculous parody, like the superhero movie and disaster movie. It's at least working within somewhat of the framework of what it's trying to critique and make fun of. But I mean, these two movies are way more in the tone and feel of the original Romero movie. You know, there is no levity in that first Night of the Living Dead. That is unrelenting and hard to watch the first time you see it, and it kicks you right in the dick. You know, I mean, Dawn of the Dead, I love that movie, but it is a very different tone than the first one, you know?
Yes.
So, and there's nothing wrong with that. I like all that stuff, but yeah, this is when you think of a zombie movie, I think of the original Night of the Living Dead, and I'll be thinking of these two movies because that's what I think of, the slow impending doom.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing is, besides Romero, visually, both of these still remind me of the Romero ripoffs from Italy.
Yeah.
You know, there is even visually a scene in this one that to me is like directly like in Zombie 2, when he's holed up and everything's coming through the door.
Yes.
And he just and what, and he's just shooting
looking through the door as they sleep was very Italian feeling.
Yeah. But then when he's firing at everybody coming through the door, and they just keep coming through the door, you know, they just keep coming through the little door. That's the end of Zombie 2 when they're in the hospital.
Yes.
I mean, that's like exactly that scene, and it's like, that's all I could think is like, wow, that is, if that's not intentional, that's incredible. But it's, if it is intentional, it's brilliant, because it takes place at the same point in the story too.
Yep.
You know, so it's like that's when you do that type of bit.
I think the eyes make the zombies look more Italian style zombie also.
Yep,
the visual look of their zombies is more like fright. Instead of just a dead person, they've got a like fright aspect to them, you know. Big white eyes, you know. You can instantly tell who's a zombie by seeing their face in this one. Whereas sometimes in zombie movies, somebody can be beat up and gory enough that you don't know if they're a zombie or not. But these guys are just like in full makeup, you know, their eyes go and you can't really fake it.
Yeah, no, I said it, and that to me, they have the same, both films again, have the same sort of deliberate pace that makes me think of an Italian, you know, one of the Italian films that came mm-hmm. after Dawn of the Dead. And again, and like you were saying here, the lack of levity, that's another Italian trait. It's rare the Italian zombie film that has any comedy in it, you know. You get that in some other Italian horror genres. We saw that when we did all our giallo, that there's an occasional mm-hmm. bit of humor, but not really in the zombie gut muncher types. So, you know, and that's and the you know, so that I like, because that's part of the genre that I enjoy. And so to get more kind of modernist takes on that aren't, you know, just that are not aping it, but sort of tapping into that same vein, that same approach, made me really appreciate both of these films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other thing too is and the because I know some people may be thinking like, well, okay, well, if these didn't, you know, the effects in this movie, right? And I think the makeup effects are great, but even like the squibs and all those things look dead on real. Like when he shoots people, he shoots them in the head and stuff. It's not like shot in the head off screen. Like they show you part of the face getting blown away. Like they spent time and money on the effects in the movie too. And
there's
I think
a little more gore in this one than the last one for sure.
Yeah, I think they had a little more money. The other thing is, but what I'm saying is though, is at the same time, it's not like, I mean, I hate to use Dead Alive because that thing is just insane. You know,
it's not over the top.
It's not over the top. It's not gory just to be gory. But like with the scene when the guy who steals the bike and eating him, the kids are eating him. It's not like they're ripping apart his guts and they're fighting over stuff. It's not like there's gore everywhere. They've got his intestines. They're just sitting there. They're over him eating.
Well, that's another zombie 2 sort of reference. Yes, you know, when they find Maynard's wife, they're all just sitting there eating her quite calmly, you know.
Yeah.
That freaked my friends out probably just as much as the splinter in the eye when we watched that when I was in college. But
the splinter in the eye, you know it's coming. They tell you, they pretty much choreograph it's coming.
Oh yeah.
But you're never ready for the splinter to go in the eye, let alone get snapped off.
That's a situation where it's like they're not gonna do it. They're not gonna do it. Holy shit, you know.
Oh, yeah. They did it.
They did it.
So
right. The thing with the kids eating the guy and all that was and first off, from a narrative standpoint, it's you know, it's bizarre that the guy steals it and then he comes to a bad end anyway, you know. But he's stealing it for a good reason. He says, I got a family and all that. So he's not like he's just stealing it to be a jerk, you know, but it's like, okay, well, what, you know, would that guy have been better off not doing that? And could you have made the choice? That guy didn't abandon his family, knowing what the potential outcome was, but our hero did.
And it said something about our hero that he didn't shoot the guy off the bike.
Yeah.
You know, right. That was the thing. It's the guy stole it and the hero was just like, damn it. Yeah. I can't shoot a real person, but damn it.
Yeah. Okay. Not then I can't. Yeah.
Right. But think about like, okay, so you remember They Live, the you know, Carpenter's They Live.
Yep.
Right. In that movie, Roddy Piper shoots a lot of people.
Yep.
He never shoots a human. He only shoots the aliens. Right. And that's the whole thing here. This guy doesn't want to kill anybody, but they're zombies. So he's not killing anybody who's not already dead. So it's not like he's really killing anybody. And so it's hard for him to be like, he's going to shoot this guy in the back to get the bike back. It's okay. I mean, again,
it's
like, I mean,
that's also not his.
Right. Yeah.
He stole to begin with. So.
Right. So, I mean, the thing is, he doesn't want to be, he's not like you know, shooting from the hip, you know, kind of like, you know, in someone out of some Western. He's fighting with the struggles that he's seeing every day. Okay, so yes, I obviously want the bike back, but if I shoot this guy, now I'm gonna leave someone wounded here so he can die. Like, that's a lot on him. You know, he's just trying to be a guy who's getting through what he needs to get through.
The guy's doing just what he did. They're both trying to get to their thing, and they're both stealing whatever they can, doing whatever they can do, short of killing somebody else to do it. Even though, like, you know, taking the guy who took the bike was a little step up because he saw the other two people. When they took that bike, I was just sort of sitting in an empty compound. There wasn't anybody alive there, so.
Yeah. But to his own fault, he did leave the keys in the ignition.
Yes. You know? Yes.
The other one is when they're in the car and they're on the road and they get run off the road just because the truck is trying to get through. That's another one reminded me a bit of Dawn of the Dead, where it's they're living in conflict with each other, you know, because there's limited resources available. So the living are in conflict, you know, not the living and the dead in conflict.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
in that one, I mean, I love that. That you talk about a practical effect. Just push a car off a hill, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing with that car that I didn't like is when it got shot up, that it wasn't covered with. They didn't put bullet holes in it. And when it was driving away, I was like, there should be a lot more bullet holes in that little car. They were lucky to get away from that alive, or without a bullet in the engine block, but. That was my only quibble with that. I love when it was just like in the last movie, you know, nobody's using, you know, mint muscle cars or, you know,
right,
here's our war machine. It's just like, look at the, that was when they were driving away in that car. I'm like, look at those tiny little wheels on that guy.
Yeah.
So happy to have those tiny little wheels. It's great.
Yeah.
And also too, again, and this speaks a lot to, again, the environment. He's going out to the job. He stops with the guy for the paragliding, right? He goes, I need gas. I don't have gas. This is what should be here today. Like, that's not something I'm sure it occurs in America. I'm not saying it doesn't, but that seems so foreign to us. Like, what do you mean you don't have gas? Like, what do you mean? Like, okay, I'll just go to the next gas station. There is no next gas station.
No, you won't.
This is it, buddy. He goes, what do you say to him? I'll get it on the way back. Right. And so even his truck doesn't have gas to travel with. He doesn't have, you know, it's not like he had a truck with a full tank. Oh, yeah. I can get back to the city. No problem with my all terrain vehicle and whatever. So, but as well made, I'm telling you, folks, these are well made movies. They are worth your time to go check them out. It's you won't be disappointed. I could tell you right now, you're not going to be very upbeat at the end. You're not going to sit there and be like, wow, what an upbeat story, but you're going to feel this is a very realistic story. It's going to be a gut punch, and it's going to be like real, and you're going to be like, okay, like I just saw something here. Like this, I know not every movie needs to change your life, but again, when you sit down and watch a zombie movie, like there's no chuckles, there's no laughing, there's no like, you know, this is not a, you know.
No winks at the camera at all.
Winks, right, you know, kind of thing. This is just like, as real as it can possibly feel, you know, kind of thing. So I think the
only thing that took me out of this movie was a little bit of some of the dialogue was a little woodenly delit. Like I almost would have wished that the Indian characters, when they're speaking to each other, would have used subtitles like at the beginning. Because I realized what they were doing is they used subtitles at the beginning to just sort of tell people, yes, these people speaking English are speaking in their native tongue, but you know, come on, we're gonna make it manageable. But at the same time, it made some of the dialogue, which was very basic, seem a little wooden. So I would have almost like there wasn't an awful lot of it, so I would have rather have read it. But it's a minor quibble. And these guys are one of the few sets of filmmakers who know how to use shaky cam and make it work for them, and without making it destructive to the action, making it not like it's not there so they could edit together an action sequence more easily, you know, very easily without doing a lot of like work, you know, setting it up or anything. We'll just wiggle the cam. They do it for a planned effect. They even, there's like drone shots of the guy going up on the roof to paraglide, and you know, drones shoot very fluidly and fly very fluidly, but even those drone shots are shaky, so they purposely shook up the drone shots, and it's very effective. It just jangles your nerves without like making you like dizzy or obscuring the action. It's very part of their visual style.
Yep. I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you can all agree that we all enjoyed these movies. And to be very honest with you, I would love to say that this was like, you know, years of planning on our part. This literally started with, hey, you guys want to watch Train to Busan? And they're like, yeah, let's watch that. And it was like, hey, there's a sequel. Want to watch that? And then it's like,
that's the best way to do it. That's how you watch movies anyway. So, you know, I like it better this way. And to tell you the truth, I was getting pretty cynical and bored of of the idea of zombie movies. I was like, okay, I'm ready to put the whole zombie genre up for a while, unless I'm watching some old movie, and let it die out and become reborn somewhere down the line. You know, somebody will come up with something, you know. Kirkman did that, and now it's sort of gotten ringed out to the, these three movies four movies have totally like wiped that away. They were great. I'm actually looking forward to the Zack Snyder zombie movie that's coming out. I'm interested to see how that
the one with
Army of the Dead.
Yes. Well, I can tell you this though. I mean, again, having seen the trailer and whatever, there's definitely more money spent on that movie than both of the Dead movies together, right?
Probably,
and I don't mean,
Well,
they had to, because Dave Bautista probably his pay for
his
the movie
salary is probably more right. than
right, right. Oh movies. Yeah, no shit. Yeah,
the thing you're gonna get a very different movie, and I'm that movie looks like it could be really fun, and like, you know, I'll watch it with the girls and whatever. The girls aren't watching The Dead with me. Okay?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
This is...
Why would you want to do that to a kid?
Well, no. I mean, like, even Kelly, I mean, she's an adult, but, like, this would be a lot for her because it's so depressing. Like, she loved Zombieland, and Shaun of the Dead is one of our favorite movies, right? And Shaun of the Dead's a great zombie movie, but it's still very funny, but it's because it's very Edgar Wright, and it's all the, you know, stuff that goes on there. And... But like, there's no way I'd want to show these movies could be kind of viewed as they're I mean, not necessarily depressing, but they are at times. It's like, this is not upbeat. This is not a, hey, let's throw it on because I'm having a shit day. I want to throw a good one. It's a good movie, but you're not putting it on to feel like I feel better. You're putting it on going, okay.
Yeah, you know? And that gets back to what we were saying about Romero and the movies that ripped off Romero, is that having that, you know, there is no silver lining here. There is no, well, you know, they kind of make it. No, it's you know, that's what always made the ending of Day of the Dead so incongruous, right? And that's why there's so many interpretations of the ending of Day of the Dead, you know. But yeah, that's to me is part and parcel with the zombie genre. It's like, you know, we talked a little bit about vampires and how they've been done every way to Tuesday. You know, but what's the part that often is in a role is seduction, right? Because that's part of the vampire mythos, right? Yeah. So you got to have that aspect, that romance aspect in it. So, you know, that I don't know that I want a zombie movie with a particularly happy ending. So,
I kind of expect it.
It goes against what a happy ending in a zombie movie sort of subverts the whole reason that, like, I mean, I've always, you know, I mean, it's not a deep observation that hasn't been made a million times, but zombie movies are about, like, you know, on every different scale, you know, the collapse of control, you know, the chaos, you know, the society breaking down or humans. So it's just basic primal, it's a basic primal fear, you know, man versus man. And the breakdown of society. And that's all you need. Those are enough basic things to throw in a fear stew for people to to have it going, you know. And once you start candy coating it or making it, you know, funny or something, then it becomes something else, and it becomes a comment on the way we view the end of society or something like that. And it doesn't become as fun as me because it doesn't play on those, you know. I guess I'm chasing the dragon because, you know, I saw Night of the Living Dead as a kid, and it was strong meat from the very beginning. And so, and I gotta say, there's still zombie movies that do it. This definitely, the ending of it was just like, ew, yeah. good.
And I love that the ending isn't just a cynical ending that comes out of nowhere.
No.
Javed tells us this story, this legend of the guy who was not, you know, that they didn't approve of the marriage, this lord, and he and his wife came together, and they were buried alive, and then when they opened the tomb, they found no bodies and all that, and then he has the flash of where he has the vision of himself slumped in there before it happens. It's like, and it was, and you know, I really liked it when that came out, and we see the room and all that. I'm like, oh snap, I really liked that, because it's like all of this. It's like Battlestar Galactica. All this has happened before and shall happen again.
Yeah, and I don't think their strong point is dialogue and stuff like that, but what they put down for the dialogue and the backstory of it at that moment, there's no words spoken in to get it, just puts you inside of his head. To where he's just like, where you're thinking just like, oh geez, you know, this is where this guy was meant to end up, and it's all tied into his past and his, you know, his tragedies and his weaknesses. You know, it's like, it's sort of, they're there because he's there because of his strengths and his weaknesses and stuff. The only thing that didn't perfectly jibe with it was, it's not the greatest fate for the kid and his girlfriend.
No, you know,
doesn't match up with their karma as much, but you know, but still, he's the main character, and it's just this is going to be a strange comparison, but it sort of reminded me of the ending of the original Devil and Miss Jones, where she's in hell. I know Hero for sure definitely knows what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. I'm just, yeah, you know.
He just has to play coy and can't let on.
No, it's not that. He's a family man.
Well, it's not what's going on necessarily in that scene, but just the feel of it. Of
really?
Going,
you sure? It's not sure just what's going on in that bit? I've never even... I know it by reputation only. So.
Well, in the end, you know, it's a standard sort of characters realizing that they're in a hellish situation. You know, it's playing out to where you're like, okay, hell is now truly become hellish.
So what you're saying is that it really is that hell is in fact other people.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, quite literally in this case, but anyway.
Yes, and it was Miss Jones and this other guy, and they were both in a room together, but they were both in their private hells, and the viewer comes to that realization, and this is the same story. And this one, they're literally underneath of the flaming city. And you're when you just start thinking about zombie movies and these zombie movies, you think, well, the next thing that's going to happen is here come all the zombies driven by the flames into the sewers. Come the flaming zombies. And they just say, and you know, it's just going to continue on. Or if it's not going to continue on, it's going to continue on with them being munched. But it was just sort of like, here's the ending point. You know, we end this unrelenting forever slog away from the zombies with this moment that has a resonance to it.
The other and you know, the other thing I liked of that is that this film continues the same Romero trend of not having a lot of nice things to say about the military. You know, that, because that scene, you know, the ending is one thing, but when they're on the when they're in line in the car, they're trying to get through the checkpoint, and they are examining people on the bus and dragging them off the bus.
Yep.
You know, different context, but you know, we're getting people, you know, that are accusing the government of doing exactly that right now.
Yep.
It's like, oh, you cough and you're not wearing a mask, we'll drag you out of here and throw you in something. It doesn't actually
happen. Yeah, granted,
but a lot of people think it does.
This one, at least they were bit, so they knew they were turning. wearing a mask.
It's
like,
right, but you know, it's like that guy had a wound, but we don't know that he was bit. He had a wound. Javed was in the same boat, right? So it's like,
and,
you know, but no,
yeah,
it's like, no,
that's
they're,
what's so
they're
horrifying about it. I mean, we assume that he really had a wound because his wife sort of saw it coming and was like, oh no, they found him, and you know, I'll always love you. They'd already been thinking about what happens if we got caught. And that scene is so terrifying because you know that, like, that kid is, they're just going to shoot that kid. They're not going to, even though he's going, oh, it's just a cut. He's just got a cut. They're not even going to check to look at it to see if it looks like a cut. They're just shooting everybody that's somewhat, and
I mean, that's profiling,
also the George Romero sort of way. It's like, there's that cold reality to it of like, yeah, that's kind of maybe like the situation
that we're in right now.
But at the same time, you don't, you still run for your life. And even if the kid was bit, he probably would have turned around and driven away too. But that scene is just so terrifying because you're just like, when they see him shoot him, you're like, oh shit, that's what's going to happen to the kid. This is reminding me of the only thing I didn't like about this movie, and was that the kid's mother had to
find
him at the end. I thought that was too much of a, that was just like, yeah, you didn't need that in there. That's pushing it a little too hard. And it was the woman whose husband had gotten shot. So that was his father, theoretically, that got shot when they were waiting in line there. And I thought, in judging by the population of India, that's some really like, strong odds. You know, it's a little too much for this movie. You didn't need that much, you know, synchronicity going on. But that's a minor quibble, and they didn't make a big deal out of it, but they still set it up and played it out.
But still,
You know. Yeah, no, that's just one little minor thing. It takes
up. We're picking at nits here. We're really trying to, you know. We're really trying to, you know, if you're really picking at nits to get that kind of love. I mean, the thing is, the movie's going to blow you away, you know, kind of thing, and you're going to just be there. So, it is available on both The Dead and The Dead 2 are available on Blu-ray. They were, well, like I said, The Dead 2 is on YouTube. The Dead was, I don't know if it still is, it was, but again, the Blu-rays are available right through Amazon, about $10 a piece. You know, they're crystal clean kind of thing, copies of the movie. You can also rent them digitally right from them, or purchase them digitally right through there for even cheaper than that, if you're looking at that. You know, just if you're looking to find it, folks, they're not impossible to find. Sometimes you find movies, you're like, you just can't get your hands on them, it takes forever, whatever. These are available. It's well worth your time. You're going to enjoy them. If you enjoy good horror movies and movies that are going to push you a little bit.
If you're listening to this show, chances are you probably do.
You know,
probably.
Good movie. Good horror movies. Some people are like, well, listen, ironically, you know. It'd be like the same people who listen to a wrestling podcast and complain about the wrestling.
But, you know, that's – I was going to say listening ironically, that's – That outcome is different than what was expected.
As far as zombie movies go, these movies, I would like, if you're making, if you want to be a zombie movie aficionado, not, you know, if you're a completist, you're watching everything, but if you want to like see or collect these, like, as far as zombie movies go, rank up there with a lot of my favorites as far as quality go. And for their budget, as far as budget to quality go, these guys are like fighting for the top space of low budget zombie movies.
Mm.
Yep.
And they're in that rare sliver of zombie movies that take themselves seriously. So yeah, these are, I would almost like put these as a necessary check them out if you're into zombies.
Yeah, oh, I'd definitely put them on there on that list. Yeah,
I would. Especially I would put them like a step ahead of like Train to Busan as far as like, you know, pure zombie movies.
Yeah, I mean, Train to Busan, I think we said it, it's kind of an American style zombie movie, just, you know, from
I'm
a
not,
slightly
yeah,
different
yeah,
perspective.
Yeah, I don't, it's still a zombie movie, but I think this just edges it out a little bit with it may not have the budget or like the quality of acting, but it makes up for it, and it's just like sticking to reality, you know, to a realistic and plausible arc at all times.
Yeah,
and it's, as I said, it doesn't insult your intelligence. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't. I don't know. As I said, it's
no.
It's hard for. I mean, that's the main thing. Is that too many of the zombie movies now, especially the cheap ones, just really insult your intelligence as a viewer, to me.
Well, it's
you know,
not
and
necessarily.
That, and
it's
this
not
one
trying
doesn't.
To be smart, and it's not
yeah.
trying to be dumb. You know,
no, it's just trying to tell to me. Like I said the same thing about The Dead. It's telling an old-fashioned zombie movie story, and it does it well during the time that it unspools on the screen. You know, that's all I can ask for a horror movie. It Jay said it. It creates a sense of dread. I legitimately didn't know. Like I said, whether this guy was gonna make it or not. And when they did make it, I did. Okay, what the hell's gonna happen now? You know.
They it was set up very well to where he's the main character, and the main character made it through the last movie, and they were doing a lot of things, but there was a lot of setup to this, and there were a lot of other well, you know, more developed characters that to make it through this movie that he plausibly could have gone. And also they did the thing in the last movie where they had two main characters. And the African main character was almost more interesting and compelling, and he didn't make it, you know. So,
yeah,
I really like. I was kind of expecting him. I was giving him about a 25% chance of making it to the end of the movie. The only one I was like, he's a goner, was the dad.
Yeah. Although, you know, it is interesting that another thing that is, I didn't even think of this, but two movies have in common is that, but one of the, we have characters that are devout.
Yes. Yeah. Oh,
because
no. Yeah.
Remember, and our African character was devout. That was, please let us not blaspheme. And his whole thing when he's dying, that, you know, he knows his soul will be, you know, will be at rest, and he didn't want his body to wander the earth. And,
yeah.
You know, here, you know, Shani talks about, you know, talks about that from a Hindu perspective,
right?
Which
I
mentioned earlier. So that's, you know, again, that's another thing. We're again, as Westerners, we're used to thinking in a Judeo-Christian sort of way sometimes, you know. But
and that shows up in our zombie movies. But like, that's the only thing that makes this that would almost make this not perfect for me to just say, ah, yeah, this is a World War, you know, I'm putting this in the World War Z universe, is that aspect of it, because they both, in both movies, I think they try to, and not with a heavy, with a very light hand, but they overlay the religious belief, the rough, you know, I mean, the rough religious beliefs of the local area into the story and into the whole feel of the thing, you know. And that's a neat and I'm sure there would be they seem to be I wish they would go on and just keep going to, you know, say, oh, yeah, we made enough money on these and we get to travel the world, you know. go do some in some other countries, because I could watch them almost indefinitely work this formula. This formula, I don't think, if you put the right stuff into it, it's never gonna get old. It's gonna be evergreen. You know, they could just keep going around the world.
You're thinking like a Hope and Crosby sort of situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh god, now I'm just thinking of road movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on the road.
I mean, could it hurt Ford Brothers just to put a little musical in there, a little dancing, just a little?
Maybe. You know?
Little charisma.
What was the I'm blanking on his name. Who was the Irv Berlin? A little Irv Berlin action in there.
What's with all this sort of, you know, doo-doo-doo music, you know? Get some good old Irving Berlin. Get some good old a one and a two and a in there. And get a couple old guys in Tin Pan Alley at their piano. Put some zazz on it.
Yeah. Oh boy. All right. Now we're talking about Irving Berlin.
But look at my toe. It ain't tapping. Ain't nobody staying in the theater unless their toes tapping. Right, Izzy? That's right.
It's either Irving Berlin or some Bubs Berkeley. One of the two.
I prefer the Bubsy Berkeley. I want the water stuff.
A big Bubs Berkeley like zombie cake.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they could have gotten away with that in Shaun of the Dead.
They probably could have, yeah.
Or what's her name? Who used to do the water ballet? Esther something.
Esther Will. Oh yeah.
Williams, right?
Esther Williams, right?
Esther Williams, yes.
Oh well, we're talking music.
Little Esther Williams scene with a shark and, you know. Underwater.
Well, that's like Zombie 2 again, right?
Yeah. Zombie 2!
It's Zombie 2, except at the end, the zombie comes up out of the water in a backward shot with sparklers in his teeth and
better have the fucking sparkles.
Smiling with sparklers gritted in his teeth, and it's like, why is this zombie dry? Why is the water just like drizzling off of him? Because they...
Oh, man.
See, I'd pay to see that. That one's going to get my nickel.
Somebody get DiMonzo's lawyer on the phone. I think we got a.
Yeah, did you see what the hell is that one company that's doing like Giant Ape versus Ape versus
the Asylum?
Asylum. Yeah. Why can't they even? They couldn't even just like do the DiMonzo thing and have it be Giant Ape versus Giant Lizard or Giant Monster Ape versus Giant Lizard. That's why DiMonzo Corp is way better than Asylum, because they put some zazz on the name, and it don't cost nothing to put some zazz on the name, you know what
I'm
saying?
I mean, their con was Tremendous Ape, wasn't it? That was, you know, mm-hmm. That was the actual literal English translation, Tremendous Ape, which is a great name, you know. Uh-huh. Tremendous Ape versus Big Reptile, that'd be...
Well, first it translated out to Tremendous Ape with Horrifying Hands, but then they realized that just didn't work into English, so they just shortened it down. Yeah.
Sometimes that's what you gotta do.
And that's like the lost, you talk about, you know, giant apes, right? You know, so you know, we're way far afield, but you know, this kind of reminded me of, you know, how Donkey Kong got his name.
Yeah.
Is that it was Stubborn Ape, right?
Yeah.
And you know, so Donkey, Stubborn, and then Ape Kong, right? So, but you know, there was a theme song. And when he's stubborn and he's an ape, he's stubborn ape. Do 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 do. That all got cut, you know. So it's one of those things that's, you know, history has spoken. So, but anyway, this is not a Nintendo Stubborn Ape podcast.
Unfortunately,
that's coming though, folks.
And actually, eventually. You know who worked on the Stubborn Ape song? Irving Berlin. So you know it all comes.
There you go. Can't help but tap the toe to that one.
visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
That is freaky.